From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Close quarter combat has been the signature style of U.S. Senate screening of judicial nominees for a long time now. But soaring tension over Bush re-nominations of nominees turned away in his first term is now moving the Senate to a full-fledged showdown. Both sides are fed up and don't appear ready to compromise. Democrats say Bush has racked up approved judges faster than Bill Clinton, and that the few they oppose are beyond the pale, hard right ideologues. Republicans argue that Democrats are abusing the Senate's advice and consent role on judicial nominees with filibusters. And to stop them, say Republicans, they will change the rules if they have to set the filibuster aside. That has been dubbed the nuclear option, a GOP majority rolling over what Democrats describe as key minority party rights in the Senate. If Republicans go nuclear, the Democrats say they have one last weapon. You could call it the kamikaze option to shut down the Senate's work completely. Tonight on Point, the new battle royal over President Bush's judicial nominees in the Senate and the nuclear option on Capitol Hill. We begin tonight with a look at the nominees that are driving the Senate to this showdown. Joining me now from Washington is Gail Shattuck, congressional reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. Gail, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be with you.
Gail, what is the profile of this group of Bush nominees who are stoking the fire?
They're all viewed by Democrats as outside the mainstream and as judicial activists. In some cases, for example, one of the most controversial that we had hearings on last week for the second time, William Myers. He was an attorney for grazing and mining interests, and he's up for the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit.
That's the Western, that's the Rockies.
Much of Western, exactly. And environmentalists and now Native Americans say he is too hostile to the environment. And he's an interesting case because the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Senator Specter, thinks he has 58 votes on the Senate floor. So it would be an interesting first case to test how strong the opposition is.
In other words, if he could get it to the floor, he's got more than a Republican majority. He's got even a couple of Democrats in there. Who else is on this list? What other kind of nominee has the Democrats in such a fury here?
Two women, Janice Rogers Brown, up also for the D.C. Circuit, and I'm sure your listeners realize that's a particularly important appointment because it covers all of the cases involving federal government.
Mm-hmm.
So it's considered a stepping stone to the Supreme Court.
What's the complaint there?
She's used language that can only be described as intemperate, describing the New Deal once as a triumph of socialist revolution and government in general as a kleptocracy. So in terms of a positive attitude toward the federal government.
It's a kleptocracy, she says. And the other woman you're describing?
Priscilla Owen, up for the Fifth Circuit. This is another interesting case because as a Texas judge, Alberto Gonzalez once described her as an unconscionable judicial activist. He's the new attorney general. I think they pick out one instance where, for example, she was a lone dissent in a case involving parental notification for minors needing abortion. And Gonzalez said that she read far too much into the law and really was outside the mainstream. So I'm sure you're going to hear a lot more quoting the current attorney general on her nomination when it comes out.
Now, how many nominees are we talking about at issue here?
There were 10 that were filibustered and 7 that have been reappointed. But there are also some in a kind of gray area. For example, there's 3 who were appointed to the Sixth Circuit: Richard Griffin, David McKeague, and Henry Sod, who were blue-slipped by Michigan Senators Levin and Stabenow. That's a Senate prerogative that says that you don't go forward on a judicial nomination unless you have the support of the home state senators. This is what Republicans used mainly to block Clinton nominees that never came to the point of a vote or a filibuster. They were simply blue-slipped.
So these were home state Democrats in this case saying,
"No,
I'd rather not have this nominee on the bench."
The issue for all three appears to be variations on are they strong enough on workers' rights.
Now, of course, Republicans have a clear majority in the Senate, but
That's right. But
they can't get over that 60-vote hurdle, the filibuster hurdle, without some Democrats coming over. But there was some question about whether a majority of Republicans themselves would support brushing by the filibuster on this. I understand that the count is in and it's looking like they have what they need to do this if necessary.
Tom, the Republican leadership says that they now have the votes to go ahead with the so-called nuclear option, which, by the way, they now refer to as the constitutional option or as the Byrd option.
Byrd as in Senator Robert Byrd. By the way, we'll be hearing later in this hour from Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia, Democrat.
Excellent choice.
And Republican John Cornyn from the Judiciary Committee of Texas. We'll hear from both of them in this hour. If the Republicans go ahead and do this, Gail, what exactly are the Democrats threatening in response?
Well, the Senate has many rules, and no one knows them better than Senator Byrd. And the number of opportunities to, as one senator put it, throw a wrench into the crank case are numerous. They could, for example, refuse unanimous consent on just about anything if they felt that the character of the institution was being fundamentally changed.
And unanimous consent is that sort of daily go-along, get-along that allows the Senate business to roll ahead. They could throw roadblocks up every 2 minutes here.
They could stop every recess. They could stop every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
The place really could be shut down. That's what they're talking about.
When Republicans did this to Bill Clinton, they paid a heavy price. How are the politics being calculated here? If it comes to this, and if Democrats lose the right to filibuster on judicial nominees and effectively shut down the Senate, who pays the piper?
I think Republicans have a price to pay there. Now, what's interesting is the split in the Republican Party between the social conservatives, for whom these judicial nominations are everything, and the business groups who have a lot of legislation in waiting in the queue, the bankruptcy bill that comes to a vote today, the energy bill, further tax cuts, the transportation bill. They want to see this agenda moved, and they don't want to see the Senate ground to a halt and sinking all hopes for further legislation in this Congress.
But it could happen. We're hearing that tonight directly from Capitol Hill. Gail Shattuck, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome. Good to be with you.
Gail Shattuck is congressional reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. She spoke with me from Washington. We are talking tonight about the new battle over judicial nominees in the Senate and the so-called nuclear option, constitutional option, Byrd option, call it what you will. You can join the conversation. Are Democrats right to lay down on the tracks to stop President Bush's hardest core nominees? What's more important here, minority rights or majority rule? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Jeffrey Toobin, staff writer for The New Yorker magazine and senior legal analyst at CNN. He had a piece in last week's New Yorker headlined Blowing Up the Senate. Jeffrey Toobin, thank you for being with us tonight.
Good to be with you.
Blowing up the Senate as in going after the filibuster. Who has precedent on their side here, Jeffrey Toobin?
Well, one of the things you learn when you start getting involved in the Senate rules is that they are much more political rules than legal rules, and they are very malleable, very manipulative. They can be manipulated by whoever is in power. I think it is safe to say that the Democrats' use of the filibuster against 10 nominees in the first Bush term was unprecedented in terms of the number of filibusters against judicial nominees. Mm. However, during President Clinton's term in office, the Republicans, who were in the majority in most of those years, used their control of the Senate Judiciary Committee to prevent about 60 of his judges from even getting to the floor and getting votes. So it is true that the Democrats have used filibusters more, but a Republican minority, a small number of Republicans, stopped Democratic judges in equal or greater numbers during the Clinton years. So there are really no clean hands here.
We'll look at the details of this, Jeffrey Toobin, but large scale, this is being described as potentially a change in the very complexion of the U.S. Senate. You cite the old apocryphal story, no doubt, of Washington, George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, where Washington says, describes the difference between the House and Senate and asks why one pours coffee into a saucer. And Jefferson replies, to cool it. And Washington says, that's why we have the Senate. That's where we can have these long debates where everything gets slowed down. It's not so fevered. The filibuster has been part of that. Do we see the very character of the U.S. Senate on the line in this debate, in your view, Jeffrey Toobin?
I think absolutely that this is a big part of what makes the Senate different from what the Senate calls the other body, that is the House. And so I think it's a profound change in terms of the character of the Senate. But in many respects, more important is if the nuclear option goes through, what we are looking for, at least for the next 3+ years, is that the Democrats become irrelevant on judicial nominations, including Supreme Court nominations, because, you know, there are 55 Republicans in the Senate. They are going to almost certainly remain in the majority through the midterm elections. So without the filibuster to stop judicial nominees, the Democrats have literally no chance of stopping a Bush nomination to the circuit or Supreme Court without substantial Republican defections, and that has been virtually unheard of in these years.
So the stakes very, very high here. A final question on the Vice President, Dick Cheney. I'm confused. Does it actually require him to cast a vote to brush the filibuster aside for judicial nominees?
Well, it's not so much a vote. Under the Constitution, the Vice President of the United States also serves as the President of the Senate.
Of course, yeah.
It is the it is in his role as president of the Senate, the presiding officer, that according to the plan that's been hatched for the nuclear option, he would make a ruling that filibusters on judicial nominees are out of bounds, are unlawful under the rules of the Senate. That ruling would then be subject to a vote in the Senate, but only a majority would be needed to sustain it with 55 Republicans, presumably. They could.
So there it would be, and we hear today they've got the votes to do it. Jeffrey Toobin, thanks a lot for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Jeffrey Toobin, staff writer for The New Yorker magazine. We're talking tonight about the new battle royal over President Bush's judicial nominees and the nuclear option in the U.S. Senate. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking tonight about the battle royal brewing in Washington this evening over President Bush's judicial nominees and the so-called nuclear option in the U.S. Senate. That is, Republicans uniting to say to Democrats, no, you cannot filibuster judicial nominees. With their majority in the Senate and in its advice and consent role, that would give the Republicans, essentially, as we just heard from Jeffrey Toobin, a free hand to push through nominees to all the courts that are in question right now and in this term, very possibly, almost likely, the Supreme Court at some point. You can join this conversation tonight. Are the Republicans right to blow by the filibuster, to push through the president's picks for the courts? And what's more important here, the filibuster tradition of minority party rights or majority rule? Is President Bush stacking the court with ideologues or just doing what all presidents do? Senator Robert Byrd, Democrat of West Virginia, has placed himself right in the middle of this fight with a Washington Post opinion piece headlined, Nuking Free Speech. Earlier today, I asked him what's at stake in this debate.
At stake are freedom of speech and freedom of debate in the Senate and the stifling of dissent in the Senate. Ultimately, your liberties as an American citizen are at stake.
You have said that if the Republicans go ahead and step past the filibuster on these judicial nominees, it could destroy the Senate's very essence. What do you mean by that, Senator Byrd?
Well, the Senate, it was not meant to be like any other House legislative body. It is a forum of the states. It is a forum in which two senators from West Virginia have the same power as two senators from the state of California or two from the state of Ohio or New York. Also in the Senate, the rights of minorities will be heard, will be tested, will be questioned, will be defended. And that's what's at stake here. We have a minority of senators on many questions. And today we have a minority of senators with respect to judges. This minority of senators have taken a stand, and they have exercised their rights under the Constitution to advise and consent to certain judicial appointments. Now, some of those judicial appointments were rejected. The president has sent them, some of them, back to the Senate. That could have been avoided, of course, that fight. All it needed to be done was to send additional names, and would go on and get past that. But here, the way to deal with this is this. The majority will have its own chair wired, so to speak, and that chair will interpret the number of senators required to invoke cloture, and it will interpret that number as being a simple majority. Mm. Well, that's out of keeping with Senate Rule 22. But that will be announced by the chair as the majority that's needed, a simple majority. And then that statement, that constitutional ruling, will be backed up by a majority vote, which will happen without a debate. Mm. And that majority vote will set a new precedent, a new understanding, a new interpretation of the number of votes that is required to invoke cloture. Now, if this can be done with respect to judges, it can be done on any other matter. For example, on Social Security, on an issue involving Medicare or Medicaid or grazing rights or whatever. And here is where the people of the states will lose, because I, as a senator from the state of West Virginia, will not be able to protect my people's, my constituents' rights in a matter of great importance to them down the road.
Mm. Senator
it's
Byrd,
just that vital. Mm.
Senator Byrd, you turned a lot of heads last week and got in a little hot water in some quarters when you said, to quote you, "We, unlike Nazi Germany or Mussolini's Italy, have never stopped being a nation of laws, not men." That's pretty fiery language.
Well, isn't that the truth? Isn't that true?
Well, it is indeed. But is this a matter of law or of tradition here?
Oh, it's a matter involving the Constitution. That's what it involves, the constitutional rights of freedom to speak.
The Wall Street Journal editorial page has come out citing Martin Gold and Dimple Gupta in the Harvard Journal of Law and Public Policy, saying that you yourself, when you were the Democratic majority leader, that you yourself in 4 or 5 different years tried to get around some traditional rules. They're drawing an analogy here between your own efforts as majority leader and what Bill Frist is considering right now. Is that fair?
Let's get to the point. Now, we can split hairs. And I have plenty of arguments to contrast and to disagree with those who might be citing this or that or something else. That's not the point. What is at stake is your freedom to speak, so long as your lungs will allow you to speak. And we must not allow the majority to take away these rights from the minority. The majority today may be in the minority tomorrow. We have to keep that in mind, too.
Senator Byrd, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Senator Robert Byrd, Democrat from West Virginia, he spoke with me from Capitol Hill. Now, on the other side of the aisle, Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, sits on the Judiciary Committee. Just an hour ago, I asked him if the GOP is closer tonight to using the so-called nuclear option to shut down the Democrats' capacity to filibuster President Bush's judicial nominees.
Well, unfortunately, we've, for the last 2 years, been met with unprecedented filibusters, and I mean that literally. This has not happened before in the history of the United States Senate before these last 2 years. And the fact is that we are ready to have an up or down vote, and if permitted to vote, we have a majority ready to confirm President Bush's judicial nominees. So I think this is really the time either for the Democrats to realize that they may be provoking a response that they really do not want, or for Republicans to finally get closure on something that really just cannot go on. We know that if we don't resolve it now, we certainly are going to be overwhelmed by a Supreme Court vacancy, and we really need to get this resolved right now.
Senator Cornyn, do you mean by that then that the Senate leadership, and ultimately Vice President Cheney, President of the Senate, is ready to take the steps necessary to push a filibuster threat aside and go for the straight up or down vote?
I think we are there. The truth is that Senator Byrd has disparaged as somehow disrespecting the rights of the minority in the Senate is precisely a procedure that he has used 4 times in the past when he was majority leader. And this has sometimes been called the nuclear option, which I think is an attempt to try to paint it as a radical step. But in truth, it is a restoration of majority rule in the U.S. Senate. And here again, a procedure that Senator Byrd himself has employed four times in the past, so it's hardly unprecedented, hardly nuclear. Really, it's more about restoring majority rights.
We just spoke to Senator Byrd, and of course, he says each of those four times were different. They were not like now, and he says what's at stake here, as you know, are the Senate's minority's rights to dissent, to unlimited debate, to freedom of speech. How do you see that, Senator Cornyn?
Well, I couldn't disagree more. We're talking about a nomination here, not legislation. We're not talking about changing the filibuster rule on legislation, because that's clearly a matter within the purview of the Senate alone. It doesn't involve another branch of government. But the Constitution gives the right to the president to nominate individuals he thinks should sit on the federal bench, and gives the Congress a right to perform advice and consent. But unfortunately, that has been manipulated and I think in many ways corrupted into a right to obstruct a willful minority, a right to prevent a bipartisan majority from performing an up or down vote on the nominee. So this is exactly what, if provoked, the Byrd option, we could call it, rather than the nuclear option, is exactly the kind of response that Senator Byrd and his colleagues on the other side of the aisle used to reinstate majority rule and to defeat filibusters, and that's all we're suggesting.
Senator Cornyn, the GOP spent many years itself in the minority and turned to the filibuster any number of times when the Democrats had the upper hand. Do you have any fear that if the filibuster right is chipped away at here, that the Republicans may one day find themselves in the minority and not have that kind of last-ditch defense for their position that the GOP used effectively during the years when it was the minority?
Well, you raise a very good point. And that's why it's important that it be clear that this would be limited to nominations and not legislation for the reasons I just mentioned. But the fact is we have to be assured that whatever the rule is that we would apply today, with a Republican in the White House and with Republican majorities, would be the same rule that would be applied if there's a Democrat in the White House and Democratic majorities. And I think that approach, rather than being purely self-serving, should be principled. And what I'm suggesting is a principle that would apply regardless of who's in the majority, regardless of who's in the White House.
Senator Cornyn, do you have a sense of timing? When might all this move ahead? When, if Vice President Cheney gives the approval and the filibuster is put aside, when might it happen?
Well, this could actually occur without the vice president being involved. As you know, he's only involved if there is a tie in the Senate. I do believe that we are getting close. Tomorrow in the Senate Judiciary Committee, we'll get an indication when we are voting on the nomination of the first circuit court nominee to come out of the Judiciary Committee this Congress. If we see a party line vote in opposition to that nominee, then I think that's a strong signal that Democrat leadership is determined to filibuster not just that nominee, but all other nominees. And then I think we have no choice but to reinstate majority rule in the United States Senate.
Senator Cornyn, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Senator John Cornyn, Republican from Texas, he spoke with me from Washington. We're talking tonight about the big battle brewing in Washington over President Bush's judicial nominees and the so-called nuclear option in the U.S. Senate. That is, to shut down the Democrats' capacity to filibuster against these nominees. That would give the majority Republican Party there a really uncontested power to push them right through, with the nominees already on hand and with any nominees for the Supreme Court that may come along in this term and perhaps after. You can join the conversation tonight. What do you think? Are the Republicans right to blow by the filibuster to push through the president's picks? And what is more important here, the filibuster tradition of minority rights or majority rule? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Perry Lang, senior legislative representative for People for the American Way. People for the American Way is a civil liberties watchdog group with about 600,000 members. Perry Lang, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Andrew McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, contributing writer with the National Review, and senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Andrew McCarthy, thanks very much for joining us.
Good evening, Tom. Good to be with you.
Perry Lang, first to you, if I may. How do you see what's going on here? We're looking from the outside. We don't know all the arcane points of Senate tradition and rule, But there does seem to be something large hanging in the balance here. How do you describe what's at stake?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of your earlier guests, Jeffrey Toobin, had it exactly right. What's at stake here is the fundamental nature of the Senate in our constitutional order, and frankly, the overall checks and balances that the U.S. Constitution sets in place. And what I mean by that is that the Senate really is a body where that can force deliberation, that can force comedy, that can force compromise between different political parties, but also between different groups who aren't partisan, who disagree on particular issues. And by having a supermajority requirement to end debate on legislation or on judicial nomination, the Senate, in effect, forces various factions to come together and to work out a compromise. And by eliminating the filibuster first on judicial nominations, and we have no doubt in the future on other matters that come before the Senate, we will begin the road of reshaping the United States Senate in the form of the U.S. House of Representatives.
Andrew McCarthy, how do you see it? Who is anyone, or if so, who's bending Senate tradition to the breaking point here, Republicans or Democrats?
Yeah, I guess my attitude would be to taking the long view. Senate traditions have actually been bent to the breaking point. And there has been a revolutionary change, which, you know, has occurred, but no one seemed to get as upset as they seem to be about this one. In my mind, the filibuster, to the extent that it frustrates the constitutional prerogatives of another branch, the president, the executive branch, is itself something that perverts the very checks and balances that Perry spoke about. I think there's a place, of course, for reasoned debate, but there's also a point in time where debate has to end, and I think we would all agree that the Senate could not use the filibuster to basically grind the government to a halt in a way that would make it impossible for the other branches to function at all.
But we have something like 200 Bush judicial nominees approved. So it's not exactly that nothing has happened on that front. Do you see the filibuster as outside the realm of the advice and consent role of the Senate?
Yes.
Why?
Because the president has the constitutional prerogative to nominate, and what the Senate's role is to basically advise and consent, which means vote up or down. I think that they're certainly entitled, and what I don't understand, I guess, about Senator Byrd's point about crushing dissent, there's no crushing of dissent here. The dissent that doesn't persuade, the dissent that can't capture a majority and can't win the day, loses, but that doesn't mean it's been silenced.
Perry Lang, look at the Constitution. Do you see the filibuster in the case of presidential judicial nominees as beyond the pale, as outside tradition?
I certainly don't. And I think, I mean, first looking back at Senate practice, the filibuster is a longstanding tradition in the Senate. It was codified, if you will, in the Senate rules by establishing a process for ending a filibuster, which the Senate didn't even have for the first 111 years that it was in existence, and specifically has been used with regard to judicial nominations and other nominations. The Democrats in filibustering nominees that are sort of outside the mainstream, that really are the worst of the worst of the folks that the president has sent to the Senate, are certainly within the traditions of the Senate. Also, I guess, secondly, with regard to the question of whether the filibuster frustrates the advice and consent power in the mm-hmm. Constitution, I think we need to read the advice and consent clause in light of Congress's and the Senate and the House's power under Article 1 to set its own rules. And what that means is that's an express power that allows each body to essentially set up the how it will consider matters, whether legislation or any other business that becomes before the House and the Senate. And so it is granted expressly to the Senate by the Constitution to decide how advice and consent works. And for over 200 years, the filibuster has been part of that tradition. And that essentially would be the revolutionary change that would occur here, to wipe out any kind of hope of a filibuster on a judicial nomination and in the future other matters.
Big doings in Washington tonight. Perry Lang, Andrew McCarthy, please stand by. Callers, we will turn to you right after this break. Listeners, you can all join us. Are the Democrats right to lay down on the tracks to stop President Bush's hardest core nominees? Is President Bush stacking the court with ideologues or just doing what all presidents do? 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the new battle royal over President Bush's judicial nominees and the so-called nuclear option in the U.S. Senate. That is, the option to shut down the filibuster option for the minority party. In this case, the Democrats. Listeners, you can join us tonight. Is the nuclear option another step down the take-no-prisoners road of bare-knuckled politics in Washington? Or are Democrats just not facing the country's new music, the will of the majority? And what's lost and what's gained if the Republicans blow aside the filibuster here? Is it short-sighted? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight from Washington by Andrew McCarthy with the National Review and the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, and Perry Lang, Senior Legislative Representative for the People, for People for the American Way. And right now from Milwaukee, by caller Tim. Tim, you're on the air, my friend.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
I would like to make a few comments about the fact that I think this is really a no-win situation for the Democrats. If they are successful, if the Republicans are successful in stopping the filibustering mm-hmm. of the judicial nominees and proceed forward, they will win the public relations battle because the American people will agree that every one of these candidates deserves an up and down vote. And if the Democrats then try to do some other things, such as shutting down the government, they will just continue to feed into their image that they are being painted as being obstructionist. And shutting down the government backfired on the Republicans years ago. It'll backfire on the Democrats. This is a no-win situation for them.
So there's a big warning for the Dems. Tim, thanks for your call. Perry Lang, I guess I have to go to you with that. President Bush says, look, I just want an up or down vote on these nominees. And our caller Tim says, if Democrats don't give it or lose the ability to stop it and shut down the government, they're going to pay a huge price. How do you see those points?
Well, a couple of things, Tom. I think, you know, first of all, what is at stake here over the long term is critically important. And so, you know, that is one reason why Democrats are unanimously opposed to the nuclear option and why some number of Republicans in the Senate from across the ideological spectrum also deeply question this option and whether it's something that the Senate leadership should trigger. I guess I would take issue with one of your earlier guest assertions that the Senate leadership has the votes locked up. It's clear that this thing is in play and could swing either way, but it's also true that, you know, a number of Republicans, conservative, moderate, and otherwise have expressed deep reservations.
We've heard that, though. I do have to share with you that today from Gail Shattuck and others, we've heard that the Republican leadership is now saying they've got the votes they need to go through with the option.
I think if you parse carefully, what they're saying is that, you know, is that we think the votes will be there, and that is mm-hmm. a kind of Washington speak that we all use that suggests, well, we're not quite there
yet. A little fudge factor.
We hope to be there. But I think, you know, to the caller's other point about the political ramifications, first of all, the American public is overwhelmingly supportive of the filibuster and the filibuster in the abstract against judges. The idea that—
How do you know that?
Well, the Wall Street Journal and I think it was NBC conducted a poll earlier this year and found that 49% of the American public supported it, while only 38% would support eliminating the filibuster with regard to nuclear options.
But Tim's saying the Democrats risk falling into the sort of party of no, as Republicans like to say, the party of no characterization if they shut down the work of the Senate.
Well, I think the problem is that The president has an agenda he wants to pass. Republicans have in the Congress have items they want to pass. An utter meltdown in the Senate doesn't bode well for priorities when it comes to tax cuts or privatization of Social Security, key priorities of the president and congressional Republicans. And so they have a great deal to lose. And secondly, one of the reasons why congressional Senate Republicans have some anxiety over this is a lot of them got elected to the Senate to work with Democrats, to work with other Republicans, and to pass particular issues, repeal particular laws that are of interest to their constituents in their states. And if the Senate melts down, their individual interests in being able to do that and work across the aisle will break down. And it's that sort of loss of comedy in the Senate, which throughout the Senate's history has really been the key to getting anything done in the Senate, that would be just another part of the collateral damage that the nuclear option would cause.
Andrew McCarthy, let me ask you about this point. We've heard it a few times tonight from Senator Byrd and others, that if the Senate goes further down this road, it threatens to really unmake the essential distinguishing character of the U.S. Senate, as opposed to the House, this saucer where the coffee is supposed to cool,
right.
where gentlemen debate for a long time if necessary, where minority rights are given gracious due. Is that at risk here? And if it is, what consequence for the democracy?
I think that concern is really overwrought. We're not talking here about stifling considered, searching inquiry into the judicial nominees. Let's not forget that, this is a very extensive process. The president nominates, an investigation is done. The Judiciary Committee holds hearings. They're extensive. They're challenging. They're aggressive. And then the nominations are placed on the floor for a full consideration.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to work. But now it's a Republican majority in the Judiciary Committee, and Democrats say it's just jam, jam, jam. Maybe it was the same under Clinton in reverse. I don't know.
I don't think there's any reason to think that the Republicans, remember, have been in control of the Judiciary Committee for some time.
That's true.
The hearings have been very aggressive on these candidates, and I don't think there's any reason to think they wouldn't be. I'd also point out that, there's a good deal of risk involved in this. I do agree with Perry to the extent that it's critical to recognize the difference between whether or not this is a valid legal strategy versus whether it's smart politics. But one thing is for certain, and that is that this debate will spill the issue of the judicial nominations in a way probably that it is unprecedented out to the American people to really think about the importance of the judiciary and the type of people that they want holding those very important positions. And I do think that this is a two-edged sword. Yes, it means that the president will have a route to actually get an up or down vote and get the people that he wants to place on the bench on the bench. At the same time, those nominations are going to be before the voting public in a way they never were before. So to the extent that people argue that there's great incentive here or great opportunity here for the president to nominate and put on the bench people who aren't qualified or people who are wild-eyed ideologues, I think there's a big price to be paid for him on that.
A lot of scrutiny in the offing there. Let's get another caller. David is calling from Boston. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Thanks very much. And my point is that the Senate was designed by the framers in order to represent the minority point of view. The filibuster rule is part of that, and to get rid of it at this stage, especially when the senators who are trying to do so, in fact, don't represent a majority of the population. I believe the Senate has never had a more concentrated controlling majority by a smaller percentage of the population. In other words, you take the 25 smallest states, they actually only represent 16% of the population, and yet conceivably could control the Senate.
But here we are talking, the GOP says, only about the filibustering judicial nominees. Now, you heard Senator Byrd say if they do that, they'll go after the whole thing. But if it's just around nominees, is that out of bounds to take away the filibuster option there, David?
it certainly is. One of the major roles of the Senate is the advice and consent on these nominees. These are federal judges who are appointed for life, and therefore it is an extraordinarily important role that the Senate plays in the way the framers constructed our government.
David, thanks for your call. Perry Lang, behind all this, it's hard not to see the Supreme Court issue looming. The Republicans may take and are already taking some criticism if they go down this road. But if that leaves them clear to use their majority on the Judiciary Committee and in the Senate to put through whatever Supreme Court nominees they like, that's a pretty great prize.
Well, it certainly is, and that is the big elephant that's in the room, so to speak. I think there's no question that the likelihood of one or two or three or four Supreme Court nominations during President Bush's second term is driving a lot of this. And I think that raises the stakes, and from our point of view, makes the filibuster all the more important. You know, there's a long tradition with regard to Supreme Court nominations of the president consulting in a sort of informal way with members of the Senate on both sides of the aisle. Former Judiciary Chairman Hatch talks about that in his autobiography, how Clinton consulted him. Well, Hatch was in the minority in the Senate about a Supreme Court nomination in 1993, and Hatch said, well, you know, this person, you know, won't pass muster, but that person is fine. And so, you know, that kind of process really leads to nominations to the Supreme Court that would be supported by the Senate unanimously or nearly so, and who would really not result in kind of divisive debates and fighting. Now,
of course, it's been a long time since we had such harmonious assent to the Supreme Court as that.
Exactly. Well, justices who were named, Justice Breyer and Justice Ginsburg. I don't recall the exact.
Yeah,
votes,
you're right. I should
say
the guarantee of that harmony.
Yeah, well, absolutely not. And so I think, at a time of deeply divided nation, politically and otherwise, it behooves the president to step up to the plate and to show some bipartisanship and try to heal some of those divisions. And in contrast, the nuclear option is to go down the opposite road, right, which is to ram through whomever the simple majority chooses. And as the caller rightly points out, in the Senate, as far as the Senate's concerned, it may not necessarily be a majority of the population. That's the way the Senate is set up. In terms of vetting nominations, Andrew does raise an important point that the committee process plays an important role, and certainly the White House plays a role in vetting nominations. I would just quickly note the floated nomination of Bernard Kerik to be the head of the Department of Homeland Security. He was admittedly never vetted by the committee, but in the midst of the White House vetting process and after the president had essentially said, this is going to be my guy, it comes out later that essentially very little vetting had been done, and there were all kinds of issues. So,
right.
I mean, really, you know, especially when we're talking about lifetime appointments to some of the highest courts in the land, or in the case of the Supreme Court, the highest court in the land.
Yeah.
You know, it certainly behooves us to have a little more scrutiny, a little more debate, a little more deliberation.
Let me put that to Andrew McCarthy. Andrew, Perry Lang says the Supreme Court issue, the potential for nominees there during this term, is the big elephant in the room. If Bill Frist and Dick Cheney pull the trigger on this option, they brush aside the filibuster option for judicial nominations, I understand that would establish a precedent. It would apply to all future judicial nominations. Therefore, when it comes to Supreme Court, no filibuster option. Republicans have 55 votes in the Senate baked in the cake. Does that mean that the kind of conversation is over when it comes to the Supreme Court? Whoever President Bush wants, President Bush would get. End of story.
No, I don't think it does, and that's why I actually appreciate that Perry brought up Bernie Kerik, because I think that's a useful example here. The Republicans have the same majority with respect to judicial nominations as they would have with respect to the person to lead the Department of Homeland Security. But as soon as somebody, leaving aside how good the vetting was as an initial matter, as soon as somebody was proposed who had problems. Those problems emerged and in some sense metastasized to the point where, notwithstanding the majority and the ability to put in place, in theory, anyone one would want, that became a politically unacceptable choice.
Mm-hmm.
The baggage that the administration would have taken on by forcing that one through was simply unacceptable politically. And I would expect, with respect to Supreme Court nominations and other court nominations, that the same pattern would hold. If the president does not pick wisely, he will pay the price for it. He won't be able, at this point, not that I think he would do this, but there won't be any excuse. There'll be a very transparent, very teed up choice.
But there'll be a lot of pressure on him. It already is. Arlen Specter felt it as well from the conservative right that helped him win re-election to put in nominees who reflect their view.
Yes, but that doesn't mean that they're not qualified. And what we mm-hmm. should really be, what we should have our eyes on here for the most part are qualified nominees.
Let's get one more call. Sam's calling from Harlan, Kentucky. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to say real quickly, I was just wondering why it's such an outrageous thought that President Bush might come back with someone a little bit more moderate after they've been filibustered. I mean, the Democrats have approved, you said, 200 people before.
Something
so,
like that. Mm.
So why can't he come back with someone more moderate?
Perry Lang, what do you say?
Well, there's no reason he can't. And as Senator Byrd rightly pointed out, I mean, once a nominee has been rejected by the Senate, it certainly would behoove him to pick other candidates who are acceptable to the White House and who would pass the Senate. Remember, we're not talking about non-conservative folks or folks that don't share the president's judicial philosophy. Over 200 of those folks are on the bench now. In fact, the president has now appointed over 23% of the sitting federal judges.
But the Republicans say, why should he change these nominees? We've got a majority here. The American people have voted. Let's go with it.
I mean, that goes right back to the way our system of government is set up. It's not a parliamentary system. It is not a system where a government is elected and it essentially then rules by fiat until the next election. It is a system of checks and balances, of shared powers between the judicial branch, the legislative branch, and the president. And the appointment power is one of those shared powers. And the Senate can exercise its prerogatives to ensure that nominations that go before it can pass muster among a substantial number of senators, not just a simple majority. And that's essentially what the filibuster rule does.
Well, it's going to be quite the set of fireworks to watch on Capitol Hill. Perry Lang, I want to thank you for joining us tonight to walk us through.
Thank you very much for having me.
Perry Lang, Senior Legislative Representative for People for the American Way. And Andrew McCarthy, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Andrew McCarthy, former federal prosecutor and contributing writer to the National Review. He's also senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.